Pom 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 pom. We are Thursday, March the 9th, 2006, and this is the 5th edition of the English version of Pom 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 pom.
1984 won't be like 1984.
Get your iPod. iPod's here.
You like your Macintosh. You like your Macintosh. Your Macintosh.
Apple. And the Macintosh, of all the machines I've ever seen, is the only one that meets that standard.
iPod. 1,000 songs in your pocket.
If today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today?
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. After a few weeks without the show, we are back again for the English version of Pom 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 Pom. We have in the past months interviewed a few people that you can listen again if you go to the website pomcast.com/en. I have, by the way, a good news is that I'm working on the new website, which should be available in, I hope, really soon, to have a pretty cool multilingual site. But anyway, we're back again, and I'm back again with Aliyah, which is with me tonight to do this podcast once again. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
So,
hi,
how are you
nice
doing?
Nice to be there. Yeah.
Cool. So, like I said in the few past episodes, there are some changes in my private life. So, thanks first of all to all the people that have wished me all the best and all the things for the baby girl who was born. By the way, who was also mentioned in the Daily Source Code by Adam Curry, which is pretty cool. I told her she was already famous because her name was pronounced in front of something like 300,000 listeners of the DST, which we don't yet reach the 300,000 listeners for the podcast in English, but I hope to reach it sometime. We're back this week with a pretty cool company and with people having a pretty big past in the world of development and Mac development, which is Carilia Software. So with me tonight I have Terence and Dan, which I will say hello right away. I will start with Dan Wood. How are you?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm fine, and I guess you are also pretty doing well.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day over here in Northern California.
So you are both located in California, but at different places. You are in San Francisco, that's it?
Near San Francisco,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay,
and on the... Yeah. In Alameda, where they keep the nuclear vessels, if you ever saw Star Trek.
Oh, cool. Nice. So, I'm pretty happy we are doing this interview via Skype, Dan, and that we are not in the same region. And on the other side of... a few kilometers away, but still in California, we have Terence Talbot. Hello, Terence.
Hi, how are you? Good to be here.
Yeah,
I'm actually
thank
in
you.
Rainy L.A. right now.
In L.A., so you are both in California, which means, as usual, we have 9 hours of difference. I'm getting used to it because most of the guys I've interviewed in the U.S. are in California, which, by the way, for the one that does not know, that is the biggest state in the U.S. This is a little bit of U.S. history or geography or whatever, and there is also a lot of Macintosh developers over there, and of course a lot of activities in San Francisco and in LA. And we're gonna start right away with a few questions I have for you guys. As usual, Aliyah will be there to say what she wanna say, to react on the things I say. I'm actually today more the one who knows the software, because I've used it, Sandbox. But she always, anyway, have something to say. So, first of all, like I said, I just introduced you guys, but it would be good if you present you, separately, one and the other. What's your background before Carilia? I discussed a little bit, by the way, with Andy from Potion Factory, and he told me you guys have a pretty deep history with Next, for example. So I'll start with Terence.
Sure. Well, by training, I'm actually a lawyer, but my real passion has always been programming. So when I graduated from college, it was the same year that Steve Jobs came out with the first Next machines. So I sold the three Macs I had at the time, and I bought an X-Cube, and I spent the next couple of years just learning everything I could about Cocoa, which at the time was called NextStep. And I also learned about Unix and relational databases and Lisp. I mean, it basically just came with about everything, and I fell in love with it. So in my first year of law school, which was 91, I started a Next-based software company with a friend in Boston called Digital Toolworks, and we did pretty well with our first product. But about 2 years later, Next stopped making hardware, and so the market for third-party software kind of basically disappeared. So after that, I did some NextStep programming for a financial company, and then I worked on OpenStep at Sun, and then I did a couple of Java startups during the dot-com days in San Francisco.
Okay.
But what I really missed was Cocoa programming and working on more user-centered products. So when one of my Java startups started to dot bomb, it was also right around the time that OS X public beta came out. I think that was like the fall of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of jumped back on the bandwagon, and it was just glorious fun to see Interface Builder again, and particularly on a Mac. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And about 6 or 8 months later, I saw Dan give a demo of an app that was sort of a precursor to Watson at a user group meeting in San Jose. And I was absolutely blown away. Here was a sort of a new way of presenting web content. So some months later, when Dan came out with Watson, I downloaded the SDK for that, and I just spent my evening hours hacking on plugins mm-hmm. for Watson, just sort of way as to get away from the depressing .bom stuff.
Yeah.
And I wound up meeting Dan at a user group meeting shortly after that, and we started talking about what cool things you could do with Cocoa. And we kept in touch, and then I started working on an early prototype of Sandbox a couple of years ago while he was sort of kind of sorting out what to do with Watson. And I
okay.
think that's a good intro for him.
Yeah, and by the way, Dan, you're pretty known for Watson, which was, as far as I know, it could have been almost got bought by Apple, no?
I suppose that could have been an alternative path for it, but they decided to do something slightly different. But, mm-hmm. you know, everything turned out okay in the end.
Yeah, but give us your background, by the way, because it's pretty important also to know it.
Well, I actually didn't come from the Next side of things. I really came from the classic Mac programming side of things. I had been using a Mac and developing on it for many years, you know, ever since the earliest days, back when I was in college in the early 80s. And so I had been programming in Forth and in C and in Pascal and all kinds of interesting different languages using the Mac. I was working in Electronic Arts, and this is when the news that Apple had bought out Next came down the pipe. And I'd been, of course, hearing all the rumors that they were going to buy out B. So I was really perplexed mm-hmm. until one of my coworkers, you know, came over to me just as excited as could be, and I was kind of curious as to why was he so excited. And so he told me about what was called OpenStep, which was the name after NextStep and before Cocoa.
Yeah.
And I just started really getting excited about it, and I wasn't really enjoying what I was doing over at Electronic Arts. They had hired me as a Mac programmer, but they kind of stopped doing much Mac development there. So I started learning the OpenStep Cocoa frameworks in my spare time. Kind of sounds parallel to Terrence there a little bit, but started learning that, and I was just trying to figure out how could I work that into a career, and that really didn't happen for a long time. I mean, so I had learned the frameworks, and I had played with them, made a couple of little pet projects, but in the meantime, I stayed doing Mac development, and then in another job, I was actually doing server-side Java, and I wound up actually losing my job during the dot-com crash in early 2001.
As a few people.
As did a few people.
Yeah.
And so I had plenty of time to look for a job. And, you know, you can't be pounding the pavement 24 hours a day. So some of my time I would spend programming on what was, I guess at the time, a public beta, or I actually don't remember what version was out then. I think it might have been 10.0, but I had been using the public beta and so on in the early days. So I built one particular product and showed it off, and I think that was probably what Terrence saw the demo of, and then I switched over and started developing Watson, and still nobody was hiring me. I was still looking for a job, and it was really when I finally just decided, well, let me just put this up and sell it as demoware and see what I can get. And after a few weeks, my wife and I sort of looked at the income figures and said, you know, we might be able to actually make a living off of this. So I stopped looking for a job and turned it into a real company.
Okay. Sounds cool. I've always heard, anyway, that when you do something with your heart and that you really believe in it, the money comes automatically. So, I mean, there is a lot of people thinking about the money, the security. But if you guys do what you love, there's pretty much a lot of example that have turned their passion into a business.
Sure. So, it really does help to have a buffer of a few months of income. I mean, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, it's going to be really hard to start a new project and all that. But if you can start a project in the evening hours or if you have a little time and a little bit of cash to see you through, then you can do some amazing things, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go a little bit into Karelia itself. So you guys kind of founded the company to work together and actually to work on Sandvox, right?
Right. We sort of rebooted Karelia after I had sold Watson, the rights for Watson's to Sun, and that just sort of disappeared, unfortunately, with Sun decided not to continue developing it. So we sort of reformed Corelli as a partnership, essentially, and so now Terrence and I are working equally and both contributing to the program.
Okay. I come back a little bit to Watson, and then we'll come back to Karelia, because it's pretty interesting. You told me in a conversation we had previously that you just had one of your child or something like that at the moment that Apple announced Sherlock, and that you was actually pretty disappointed with the announcement of Sherlock a few years ago.
Yeah, it was one of these interesting bits of timing where the convergence of three events. One was Apple releasing Sherlock 3, and you know the idea was that Watson was initially envisioned as sort of a companion application to Sherlock 2, and Sherlock 2 was used for searching the web. I mean, that was back before everybody used Google. And so I had built Watson to be explicitly similar to Sherlock in that aspect. I gave it a complimentary name, but then when Apple took pretty much all the functionality or a huge chunk of the functionality out of Watson and put that into their new Sherlock 3, of course I was not pleased. That happened the same week, that the announcement of that happened the same week that Apple awarded us the Apple Design Award for Most Innovative Application, which of course I always thought was sort of ironic that here they are on one hand telling us we're very innovative and on the other hand saying, well, you know, we came up with this idea and it's, wow, what a coincidence, it's similar to yours. And then, yeah, also that exact same week, my second child was born. And so the result of that was that I was really more focused on the baby and family life, and so I just sort of sat back for a little while and let the chips fall. And it was because of the fact that I started getting emails from Watson users who had been, you know, other developers who had access to the beta versions of, I guess this was Jaguar, and had tried using Sherlock and were kind of stunned to see that it was really slow and not very interesting to use. So I got a lot of encouragement from the users saying, hey, keep up the development on Watson, don't give up. And so I decided to keep pressing forward, and it was continued to be very successful in spite of having the essentially free competition from Apple.
And by the way, I stayed there because it's a pretty interesting thing. It would be interesting to remember to the listeners when did Sherlock came and when did Sherlock left, so to say. Because as of today in Tiger, or even a little bit before in Panther, there's not a lot of people using Sherlock anyway, and also Apple is not pushing it anymore. So, which is actually pretty disappointing. So, I think if I remember, like you said, Sherlock was only announced for Jaguar, can it be?
Right, it was announced around the time frame of Jaguar, and okay. it's still there. It still runs.
It's still there.
It's not on your dock anymore when you install a new application as of.
And it's not promoted.
It's certainly not promoted. And really, you know, in a sense, Apple has moved on, and they're doing similar things with Dashboard. And in a sense, I'm kind of pleased to see that Dashboard has has taken off because it sort of validates the idea of web desktop web services. It's just not quite the same package, and it's done in a completely different style. But it's at least it's nice to see that there are web services available. I mean, when I came up with Watson, I developed it because I wanted the program. I wanted something that would give me quick access to the weather and to movie listings and that kind of thing. And so I can use dashboard widgets for that now.
Yeah. Okay, let's go a little bit more in Sandvox. Since when are you working on it, and how did you thought about doing such a tool? So maybe Terence can answer this question.
Sure. I wound up moving down to L.A. because my fiancée, Lisa, was going to go to law school here. And looking around for something to do, I wound up doing some consulting back to companies in the Bay Area, which kind of slowed me down. But Dan, just before I moved down here, Dan started talking to me about this application that would build websites and let families set up things to sort of keep in touch with everybody and you know, a general sort of blog and communication builder before that was even really popular. And so I said, yeah, that's a nice idea. Let's think about that. And it was about probably almost a year later when I said, wow, you know, we got to do this. Dan was kind of heavily still involved with Watson. So I kind of started on my own probably in late 2004. And is that right, Dan? Is that the right time?
Actually, 2004 is when I finished working for Sun, because I had worked for Sun when I sold the rights to Watson. So it was really probably would have
yeah,
been
it was
early
2003 then. Yeah,
late
I'm off
2003.
Here.
So you both work for Sun, which is funny.
No. Oh well, different times. That's true.
Not at the same time, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So So I guess it was really 2003. I mean, we've been sort of kicking this idea around for quite a long time. And so I worked on sort of a prototype version on and off for, I don't know, 6 or 9 months. And then I went up to WWDC and showed Dan what I had. And he got excited about it, but he was still doing the Watson stuff. So he encouraged me and gave me some ideas, and I kept going with it. And then I guess that does take us to 2004 when Sun sort of lost interest in Watson. And, you know, Dan can talk about that more if he wants to. But he found himself, you know, wanting to come back to this project. And so we just started working on that as hard as we could, and we've been going now about a year and a half or so on it.
Okay. Let's turn a little bit into the news, and then I will come back to you guys to the interview. Of course, when I speak about a few news, you are invited to react on the news. First thing we're going to speak about, because since we did the last show in English, there was this fun product event that took place in Cupertino directly with the introduction of the new Mac Mini with Intel and Front Row. So new is the Mac Mini. Not really, but it still has an Intel processor and Front Row, and pretty cool thing actually. It has 4 USBs because 2 USB in a machine is a little bit short, and it has some pretty cool thing, which is of course the remote control and the Front Row things. And except that it seems to be of course faster with a Core Duo and a Core Solo. And the cool thing is also they just added gigabit Ethernet. But the downside of all those cool things is of course the price, because the Mac Mini is not only mini for the price, because now the way they promoted the Mac Mini last year was this is a $500 machine, and it's the machine for the switchers. Now it's directly I think $650 or something like that for the first machine, and the second machine is already $850 or something like that. So it's a pretty expensive for a switcher machine. And another thing I wanted to talk about is a Front Row, because it's now in 50% of the machines. And another thing, which is the Front Row enabler, which is a little tool wrote by Andrew Escobar, which is currently being I don't know if sued is the correct term, but Apple asked him to stop the development of this. I wanted to have your take on that, by the way, guys, about this Front Row dilemma. A Front Row is a pretty cool thing. If once you have it, if it works, you can't use it anymore. I say if it works because it still have a few bugs, like typically always saying that it cannot reach the server for the trailers, but still the trailer plays, so whatever. But it's so cool that everybody wants to use it, and also people not having new machines. So I think it's pretty stupid from Apple to disable that instead of selling something like an external infrared adapter and the front row remote and give the ability to run front row. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I actually agree with you completely. I think it's really good software. I hope I don't get myself into trouble, but I really wanted to see it. So I actually did use the enabler, which worked fine, and tried it out and experienced all those things that you say. And I don't know why it says the movie trailer doesn't respond yet. It does respond.
The way to say it is, I heard it works. Somebody
I heard
told
it works. Yeah,
somebody
I heard
told
it works
me it works
on my machine. Yeah. Somebody told me it works on
my machine. 5. Yeah.
I think it's I agree with you. They ought to sell the remote and some sort of IR device to pick it up that plugs into your USB.
Well,
there is a
device which is the universal dock for the iPod, which is also an infrared receiver. So that's my point. That's what I don't understand. If you have a universal dock, they could also sell the Apple remote separately, and then you turn your G5. Well, I mean, I guess one of the reasons is because, just like the thing of iChat AV not being able to do video conference if you have less than 1 gigahertz, it's just because they want to be sure the software is running on a super machine. So this way, the software is fast. But still, it's not really...
Sure, yeah, and that's going to make a big difference. But, yeah, they ought to,
There are other ways you can deal with that. There are other ways you could deal with that. I mean, if there are some technical requirements to make it work, you can just do those tests in software and have the application work and then say, hey, hang on, this isn't going to work because you don't have Quartz Extreme enabled on your machine or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't really think this is the solution to stop the program working like that. Like I said, we have the same example. A few guys in the podcast were having a PowerBook G4 12-inch 867 megahertz, which is the first generation of PowerBook G4 12-inch, and of course it's less than 1 gigahertz. So you're not able to do video conference. You're not able to take part of a multi video conference, and you are not even able to start a multi audio conference just because you have 133 megahertz to less, which is actually pretty stupid. But anyway, there are also some tools to let iChat do those things also. The second thing I wanted to speak about, and then we come back to the interview, is the iPod iFi, which is the second thing they introduced to this special event. The iPod iFi is just, I say, it's a big speaker for your iPod. So for me, it's not really the revolution, although I can really see it's going to be sold by millions. That's not a problem. Even though I think it's cool, but it's not like the revolution. It's really introduced like the perfect accessory of the iPod. So we'll see how it goes, and we'll see when the next things from Apple comes. We come back to the interview because I still have a few cool questions for you. And by the way, in the meantime, I think we completely lost Alia.
No, I'm because
still here. Oh, no. Oh, you're there. Okay.
Yes, I am. I came back.
Okay, you're back. Okay, because we had some technical problem. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm happy you're back.
Thanks.
And by the way, with Alia, we interviewed a few shows ago, which was the second show, I think. The guys from Real Mac Software, the guys who have done Rapid Weaver. By the way, we never had any contact with them anymore. I don't know if we did something wrong or whatever, but still, it's weird because, by the way, I can be really open about that and then go to the question. Since almost 1 year that we did a show, we have done a bunch of interview and we kept in contact with all the people and everybody's happy. And the guys, the two English guys, Ben and Dan, we don't have contacts anymore and we don't understand why. But anyway, about Rapid Weaver, did you know Rapid Weaver when you started Sandvox, and how do you see them as a concurrent? Because we'll talk later about iWeb. iWeb is definitely not a concurrent to either RapidWeaver or Sandvox. But still, RapidWeaver and Sandvox, they have some common functionality. So how do you see them as a concurrent, so to say?
Well, actually, when I was coming up with the idea, I was sort of looking at it from two, well, maybe three standpoints. The idea for Sandvox, and one was for publishing photo albums, because I just wanted to get pictures of my kids up on the web, and I didn't really want to use the Mac.com tools. And I was looking for ways to get blogs up in a way that non-technical people could do. I mean, back then, this was before most people knew what blogs was, and I was thinking, you know, we have to make a way that people can write blogs, but they won't even know it's called a blog. It's just hidden, you know, an RSS feed is hidden. And then also just for general website creation. And so I looked at a whole bunch of different applications out there that put photo albums up and put you know, simple website builders, and some of these were online tools and some of them were desktop applications. And so I actually, you know, looked at whatever the versions from several years ago, you know, 2003 versions of a whole bunch of these web building applications, and none of them really appealed to me. So I don't even remember exactly which ones I saw. I'm sure I saw all of them. You know, just go to Version Tracker and look for, you know, look under web utilities.
Okay.
So I just, you know, I wanted to build something that, you know, even though there was the space of website building tools and photo album creation tools, there were certainly other programs up there. I wanted to do something that was just a lot better than all of them.
Okay. Okay, so now we go to the next question. In Sandvox, you have a lot of nice effects, by the way, which you can turn off, by the way, for the listeners and future users of Sandvox, which means a lot of really, kind of, I would say, three-dimension effects or nice effects like you have in the dashboard and things that going from one side to the other and speed effects. I personally think it's really important because we are away from the horrible dust interfaces. But on the other side, there are some people saying that it's not important and that you shouldn't spend time on make it nice, so to say, but you should more spend more time on making it functional, and it doesn't really matter. Although, of course, people using Mac OS X, for them it's more important than people using Windows, because the Windows application, for 90% of them, they look ugly. 10% of them look almost as cool as the one of Mac OS. How do you see it? How important is it for you to make it with those nice effects? Terence, maybe?
I think it's very important. I think it's important that you keep up with the latest UI and make things interesting and informative for the user. I mean, that, you know, the Quartz Extreme stuff is so easy to do in Cocoa that it's really not that hard to add that kind of thing. I was hoping Dan could talk a little bit about the Quartz Composer stuff he did, which is a little more advanced, but
sure.
I think it's vital.
Yeah, one thing that we did, something that people might start to notice on the designs, because we're still trying to kind of get these out into the different web designs, is that we're using Quartz Composer in order to build sort of these really nice, interesting graphical titles for your page. And so I was just looking for something that we could represent a set of instructions as far as, you know, here's the string in a particular font, and, you know, give it a little interesting drop shadow and some sort of wavy line effect or something like that. And so when I realized that when we decided to target this for Tiger only, we looked around and saw that Quartz Composer and would be a really great opportunity for us to essentially build a little set of instructions for how to turn these graphics into really nice little compositions. They're called Quartz Composer compositions. And so when you choose some of the different designs and you look at the title, you'll see that it's in a particular font, and maybe it's the text is rotated slightly, or there's a little shadow or something like that. The kinds of stuff that I wanted it so that someone didn't actually have to go in and program some stuff in Cocoa in order just to get a nice graphical effect.
Okay.
So, you know, again, that's the kind of thing where the end result is that you're going to get a website that's really dynamite looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, of course, and it's for me once again. I really wanted to emphasize on the fact that it's really nice to use an application that looks nice and that makes you think. Every day when I use macOS 10, I always repeat it, but it's really like that. I believe I'm in a movie. I don't believe I'm using an OS because it really like sometimes I'm in the Matrix or in some cool interface that makes me think I'm not using a computer and I'm not fighting with a computer. And everything is nice, and all the Aqua interfaces make it so funny. So, for the listeners listening to us that doesn't yet have a Mac, because I know there are a bunch, just have a look on it, and you will see what we mean by that. And then when you will go back in a Windows box, you will even see it more, because you will see how not nice it is on this side. From my experience at this current state, because I've used Sandbox and I've done a little project that is not yet online, but of course it's a beta, so it's still a little bit buggy, which is normal, but it promises really cool futures. When do you plan approximately on going live with it?
I would say, you know, it's taking a lot longer than we were hoping. Someday. We're actually targeting the end of this month, the end of March, and unless there's some real showstoppers that just prevent this from happening, I think we're getting close to fixing enough of the biggest bugs. I mean, there will always be bugs in software, you know, even at a 1.0 and a 2.0 release. It's just a matter of how can we deal with the worst bugs, make sure that most people are happy, and then we need to be responsive. I mean, if somebody discovers a bug that's stopping them from producing, you know, if we can turn around and get an update out within a few weeks as opposed to a few years, like some companies
yeah,
do, then I think we'll be fine.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We've said it already 3,000 times. The cool thing with shareware companies is if there is a bug, you have an update in the next days, or at worst case in the next weeks, and when you need a new functionality, you can just ask the guys and they will probably implement it in the next version, which will come in 1, 2, or 3 months maximum. Whereas with big companies like Apple, of course, they come up with a new version every year. At the best case, because some other applications like Office or Adobe or things like that, it comes every 2 years. Come back a little bit to some news I've read this week. First of all, is we are approaching from April Fool's Day. It's now in 3 weeks, so we'll see what happens on this day, because I can remember to the listeners that the 1st of April 1976 Apple was made, and so it will be 30 years, and a few days before it was me, so I was conceived a few days before Apple. So I always find it pleasing to think that they waited that I was born, just like my baby girl waited that the Fun Product Conference was done before she came to the world. So it's already a Mac
and
fan.
Just how my son waited until we actually got our Apple Design Award.
Oh yeah, by the way. But also Sherlock. So, which is, by the way, right, if we come back to that, which is really pretty weird, because like you said, on one hand they tell you, oh, it's really nice, but on the other hand they kind of think, oh yeah, we've seen it's really nice and we're gonna do the same. But we'll speak about that later also with iWeb. So April Fool's Day, we'll see what happens. Of course, the things with the Fun products, was not the real announcement, so to say. We always wait for new products, but on the other side, like I wrote on the French website pomcast.com, I wrote a post this week, and the post title was "Get a Life," and it was inspired by a post I saw this week from I can't remember, from the Joy of Tech. Okay.
Oh, that was great. That,
yeah. From Steve Jobs, by the way, which I could remember that by looking at it, which is about getting a real life and not always thinking about rumors and thinking about apples. Of course, computers are important, software are important, our job, we are all geeks and we love that, but there are much more important things. And like Steve was saying in the Joy of Tech, get a life, people. And
did you recognize the source of the inspiration of that comic?
Oh, not really. Maybe you can tell us.
There was a famous sketch where William Shatner played himself at a Star Trek convention. So there's all these Star Trek fans, and he's saying, "Why don't you people get a life?"
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the trick is not even. Trickies are worse than the Apple fans. But
But it's really like that.
So what if you are a Trekkie and an Apple fan? Does it make you have a life? You know, you have a life outside Apple and.
I wrote this post also because it's a listener of us that wrote me a mail and with the link to the Joy of Tech, and then I thought it was perfect with what happened in my life a few days ago. Then you realize, of course, everything is important, but once you see at some important thing in life, then everything else is almost not important anymore. Was pretty cool to see at how the community is, because we get always remarks from the PC community, so to say, if there is a PC community, telling us that we should get a life, and which is sometimes really true, because the Mac community is sometimes crazy about all the rumors and the iPod video comes every 2 days, a new picture, and it's pretty cool. And by the way, I really love the way it ends with the two guys saying, I think it was hinting that Apple is starting a dating service. Which is the best part of it.
And you know what's especially interesting about the thing, that get live thing about Mac fans? It is that actually there is no Windows community as there is a macOS community, and they're actually trying to create a marketing strategy that kind of is the same with what they just did with the heard of Origami project, which just went live today. So we're just basically trying to do the same marketing strategy. So I wouldn't bet that Steve Jobs would really want us to get alive. Because that's actually most efficient.
I was about to speak about the Origami, which is funny. You read in my mind, because this time you didn't get the show preps before. I was about to speak about the Origami from Microsoft, which is another hardware from Microsoft's partners, because if you look at how many versions there is of Windows, it's pretty amazing, because you have XP Tablet PC Edition, Pocket PC, smartphone, and you can run Windows on pretty much everything, up to your microwave can run Windows. I'm not pretty sure you're gonna eat if your microwave is running Windows, but well, anyway. I was wondering, where's the iPhone? Because it's still this big rumor of the iPhone and the fact that the MP3 market won't last for the next 10 years, because you see more and more mobile phones getting super camera and super MP3 players. Of course, there is nothing like an iPod in terms of usability, but still, I, as a geek, and I should say as a normal person, I don't want to have with me every time my mobile phone, my digital camera, and my MP3 player. So I'm pretty sure Apple is thinking about that. I'm pretty sure it's going to come. When is just a question. But I'm pretty sure if they don't come with it, they might lose the MP3 market in the next, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, because one day or another, look at the camera phones today. The one from Sony Ericsson, they are pretty amazing. And if they can have such a pretty cool thing like an iPod, but with phone and camera functionality, it would be really nice. So we'll see where it goes. And by the way, what's your take on that, Terrence or Dan?
I'm not much of a cell phone user, so I can't really imagine myself. I don't really care about it too much. But
the iPhone? I won it yesterday. Absolutely. Yeah.
Terrence, you were saying?
You're saying about the iPhone or Origami? I don't know much about Origami, but the iPhone I could use yesterday. I mean, I definitely want a device that combines all those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I used to have a Palm phone, and it was big and it was clunky and it was nice, you know, up to a point. But
a Trio, you mean?
Eventually, I just got tired of it. No, it was before the Trio came out. It was basically a Palm 5 inside of a cell phone.
Well, I'm kind of willing this mobile phone. I have actually one of my mobile phones is a smartphone with Windows, because there are no smartphone with the macOS 10, because I wanted to have kind of a PDA and telephone, and I also wanted to have something like a friend of mine has, which is a Pocket PC Phone Edition, which is really a Pocket PC and which you can synchronize with your Mac also. And also a telephone, and you can have also GPS on it. So it's, of course, it's not the market for everybody, but if you look at normal people, and I'm not talking about geeks, now almost everybody has a telephone, an MP3 player, and a camera. And if there is a perfect tool where you can put the three things together, it's of course the mobile phone, because nobody's leaving the house without his mobile phone anymore now. So anyway, we'll see where Apple goes, because the only question is where Apple goes. Everybody else is going that direction anyway. Sony Ericsson is doing some pretty cool products. Nokia is also doing some pretty cool products, but nobody has the integration that Apple has, and the suite of software that Apple has, and also the market, because if they come to go tomorrow with an iPhone, of course it's going to be targeted like being an iPod with a telephone or whatever. And it's going to work, of course. So, we come to the next question. We come back to the interview. And we're going to speak a little bit about iWeb, of course, because you can't really speak of Sandbox without speaking of iWeb. Of course, it's pretty new, because it's only there since the beginning of this year at the Macworld. And my question is the following. Now that iWeb is on every Mac, of course, you might not sell as many copies as Sandbox as you thought at the beginning, but like you said in a post I read on your blog, iWeb is very limited, and I also know it from my own experience, because I did a website a few days ago with it, and it's pretty limited. What do you think is the biggest advantage apart the FTP not only .Mac of Sandbox? Because first of all, the iWeb's biggest nightmare for me is that it's only for .Mac. If you don't have .Mac, you have to export to a folder and then use another FTP program. So it's a good thing to sell .Mac. And by the way, before that I go into that I let you answer, I can give a trick to everybody's using iWeb and that is bored about every time getting the message box, what's your .Mac account? What's your .Mac account? If you want to get rid of that in iWeb, just enter whatever you want and the information in your system preference. Enter Steve and 123 as a password. It will say it's not a valid password, but when iWeb starts, it will work without asking you. So, now I come back to the question, iWeb Sandbox. Terence, then, who want to answer?
I can take it.
Okay.
Well, yeah, we were certainly not pleased when we heard about the whole iWeb thing, although, I mean, we were kind of anticipating that that might happen eventually. It just sort of caught us off guard. Because, you know, essentially iWeb is the application pages with an HTML export on it. And we've been working so heavily in the notion of actually, editable web views, where, you know, we actually have the same web view that is in Safari embedded right there in Sandbox, and you edit the text right there in that web view. So, we were so focused on that particular way of building up a web page that we were kind of blindsided by Apple's announcement. But I mean, you know, we after the 24 hours of shock and dismay, we had to sort of realize, okay, well, we still have a lot of things that are unique about Sandbox, and we just need to make sure to play on that. And yeah, certainly the .Mac export is iWeb's biggest limitation, and people can get around it, but it's certainly not going to be convenient for anybody. But I think really where Sandbox is going to shine and people are going to start realizing is the expandability of the program. That you're not just limited to a couple little pages of here's an About Me page and here's a little, you know, a couple of you know, a blog post and here's some photos, but being able to extend it, and if you're a small business, being able to actually put in some custom HTML. I mean, we have our own Corellia website, you know, the main bulk of our website is built with Sandbox, but it actually has PHP code embedded in it in some, you know, using some hooks that are available in Sandbox so that we can actually deal with setting cookies and, you know, the sign-up form is actually raw HTML that's put in there. And so someone who wants to do just a really simple website and they're publishing to .Mac, then, hey, iWeb will probably work for them. But if they want to actually go anywhere beyond that as far as where they're publishing or what they can put on the page, then I think they need to look at Sandbox.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan, what's your take on that?
That was Dan.
Oh, sorry.
This is Terrence.
The song was better.
I said it better myself.
Yeah, that was... okay, sorry. I thought the song was better for being Dan. Because Dan is using... Oh, by the way, I should say that at the beginning of the show, because it's pretty cool for the listeners. Every time that I get two guys, there is one guy having a perfect sound and the other one using an iSat or an internal microphone. On. So from now on, you will remark that by the fact that Dan is using an iSat, which is not the so good sound, but still okay, and Terrence is using a headset, which is a perfect sound. So by the way, what were your first thoughts after you heard the rumors about iWeb? Because it was announced only at the beginning of January, but it was already rumored at the beginning. Did you changed or better said, did you change the way you market Sandbox since iWeb is there?
Yeah, we did. I mean, I think the first rumor came out sort of the end of the week before the January Macworld, and you know there was a few moments of fear and panic when we tried to confirm the rumor, and we got some indications that it was true. And so it sped up our timetable, which ironically has actually cost us a little bit of time. We were originally planning to get our beta out around the end of January, but we figured, wow, if this iWeb thing is real, we've got to do something fast. So we basically changed everything we were going to do the weekend before Macworld and just, you know, put everything together as fast as we could to get a beta out to people to say, you know, hey, we're here too and we have a great program. Please check us out. And you know, I'm pretty pleased with it. I think it worked. I think we got a lot of really good response. And, you know, we're close to shipping and I think it's going to turn out very well. Dan, what do you think?
I think I couldn't have said any better myself. That was one advantage of being a small company is that we were able to turn around on a dime. And I mean, literally, we had, I think, from the Thursday to the Tuesday. I mean, you know, we worked all weekend, but we were able to turn things around and actually get the whole beta, you know, get the whole thing packaged up. I mean, we had to work pretty hard to turn it from this program that was going out to, you know, just a few hundred people to suddenly potentially being to several thousand people. And you know, the server, the website host we were using wasn't able to handle the load, and so we had a lot of people saying, "I can't download the program," and you know, so we had to deal with some issues like that. And then, of course, the other problem, as Terrence was saying, where it slowed us down is suddenly we had to kind of support a whole bunch more people out there. I mean, when you have some bugs that you're trying to fix, but you have, you know, 20 different people reporting the same bug, that's a lot of extra overhead that we have to spend answering them and processing the bug report and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you guys have already an idea approximately how you're going to price the software? Because until now, it's a beta, so it's freely available to download. But you're going to have to sell this thing. So you guys have an idea?
Yeah, that is a good idea. Maybe we should sell it.
No, we have an idea. We should sell it.
Yeah, we actually don't have. We don't have. You know, we're still trying to finalize how we're going to do it and everything. We want to. You know, we've been telling people who ask that it'll be definitely under $100. You know, I don't want to. This is not the kind of a program that I think should break anyone's home budget or small business budget. But yeah, we won't have the actual numbers out until later on this month. Probably.
When we announce our release date, we'll probably announce that too.
Okay,
yeah.
And of course, don't forget to send a free copy to Steve Jobs. Of course.
Actually, you know, he might not need one.
No,
he has iWeb.
Yeah, but he's like everybody else. He can't really use iWeb. So, and I have a question for you, by the way, from Austin Sasser, which is the developer of AppZapper, which we interviewed in the last podcast, in the number 4. And he just asked me, just like that in a row, what's like being kicked by Apple twice in a row?
I don't know if the second time was really a kick. It was just, you know, it was...
But you guys are pretty famous for that, you know, in the Mac community.
Yeah. Oh, what was that? There was some... someone put a reference to this obscure character in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that kept getting killed over and over again, and you know, I don't, I don't want us to be that character. I mean, you know,
no, I'm tired of that. Regardless for our third product, you know, Apple can do something else.
But I guess you're trained now, so
Regardless of the problems we had, I mean, with Watson, it was still a good income, and I think this will be a very successful product. And so, you know, if that's the price of business, then so be it.
Okay. As usual.
At least we know we're you know, doing what people want, I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
And because Apple moves so slowly, we have a year to catch up.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Aliyah, you're still there, huh? I guess you're not dead.
No, you're still there.
because you don't have a lot of questions today, so that's the reason why. I just wonder, because normally she's asking 3,000 different questions. So, so I just wanted to check that you're still alive.
Oh, I'm sorry. I actually have a question for you guys.
Okay, then go for it.
About the web standards. Yeah, I was wondering, how important do you think the WC3 standards are?
I think it's really important, and I think it's kind of a laugh at how bad the HTML that's generated by iWeb is. And that was one of the things that I got onto the HTML and CSS bandwagon really early on with this product, I've been sort of swallowed the Kool-Aid about cascading style sheets and web standards and that kind of thing. And so I wanted to always make sure that the pages that we produced were worked really well across different browsers. You know, essentially, I had read Jeffrey Zeldman's book and his famous Orange Book, and just really, really got into it and said, you know, we have to do that. And so we try to make sure that our HTML that we generate is valid. If possible, it's actually strict HTML, which I don't think anyone has ever seen in a website builder.
No, it's
And it'll actually downgrade appropriately, because if you need an iframe, which isn't part of the strict HTML, then it'll downgrade it to the transitional. And you know, it's pretty smart about that. And the nice thing is, because we're using standard cascading style sheets, that our website designs, each individual design can be totally different from the other ones. And so, whereas something like with iWeb, when you change their I think they call them skins from one to the other, it's just a slightly different look on the page. But with our designs, you know, you might have the sidebars on one side or on the other. I mean, I went back. Really, what inspired me besides Zelman was the CSS Zen Garden, which, if you haven't checked it out, it's csszengarden.com.
Yeah, it's the reference.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing, because what you're seeing is the exact same page.
It's inspiring.
Page. Oh, it's exactly. It's the exact same page, but put into, you know, the most amazing creative designs. I mean, some designs, which I'd love to emulate at some point, would be even a horizontal scrolling design where your stories move from side to side. And so, you know, I wanted something like that where people can really get creative. And we have this plugin architecture, and actually you can go to our, it's not actually linked from our homepage as of yet, but it's wiki.corellia.com, and that's where we're having some user documentation. But we're also putting up the documentation on how somebody can build their own CSS designs for Sandbox and plug it in so that they can have a Sandbox page and have their own unique look and maybe publish it themselves.
By the way, we spoke about designs and how important are the designs from you and the one that you do with CSS and all those things. How often are you going to give the users some new designs, or is it going to be like an option to, I don't know, buy designs or get some new designs? Because, you know, in those programs, what is for me one of the most important things is that there is a wide variety of designs. Otherwise everybody's having the same design. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, one lesson I learned with Watson was that if you open up the architecture as much as you can to allow other people to sort of find ways to plug in, that people will do that. And so I wanted to make it so that people can build their own designs, and not only build their own designs, but new page types and new pagelet types, and you know, new, you know, Cocoa programmers can build in stuff too. But by publishing the design specification and document it, we're hoping that we'll get some third-party designers who build in their own things, and they can maybe sell them or give them away. I don't really know. I know there are some fellows who develop designs and themes for some of the other web building applications that, like Arapahoe mentioned, and some of the others. And so, you know, if they can make a little business out of it, hey, great. Or if someone wants to just make an interesting design and say, hey, here's my design, and give it away, that would be great too. We're really encouraging people to produce designs, and, you know, we have ours licensed in such a way so that it's really easy to make a derivation of. We're using sort of a Creative Commons style license, and same thing actually with our source code plugins. I mean, we're actually releasing all the source code to all of our plugins, so the page types, the pagelet types, so that some Cocoa developer can go and say, hey, I want to make something similar. You know, I just heard today about the website, the internet radio station called Pandora, and they have this ability to put a little list playlist onto your website. And, you know, somebody could go and say, hey, I want to make a little Pandora plugin, and they could build it really easily and make, you know, add that value to Sandbox and either give it away or sell it if they can figure out how to.
Okay. Do you guys concentrate on Sandbox, or are you working on other projects?
Oh, boy.
I guess
no,
not.
It's pure Sandbox all the way.
Okay. Sandbox.
I guess.
I mean, I'm trying to occasionally visit my family.
We have ideas.
I mean, like, for example, it's not the fact that you sell iWeb that you thought, okay, we keep on doing Sandbox, but still we have to have a kind of a just-in-case scenario, you know what I mean? Because it could have
We'll see after Sandbox is released, but we might as well get the program finished before we start working on something else.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, anyways, 24 hours is always too less, so that's the problem for everybody. and there is only, and at a certain point, we have to sleep a few hours a day, at least. So, I read a few news now, and then I come back for the last questions that I have for you guys, which are, the last ones are a typical question that I ask to almost all guests, but they are also pretty interesting. The thing I read this week was that Apple is gonna delocalize some of its help desk in India, so I have nothing against India, and there are pretty smart people over there, but I think it could, from my opinion and from my experience, it could lead into, some problems if people, for example, don't really speak perfect English or whatever, or if they are not well trained. So I hope it's going to be okay. But if they move all the things to India, of course, it's for one reason, like producing the iPod in China is just for economic reasons. So I hope everything is going to be okay for the consumer, and for countries like India or China, it's good if they have work, of course. So I have nothing against that. But I thought it was pretty important to see that, because it I didn't really saw Apple like another company having to delocalize some things in India or in China. But still, even though everybody thinks Apple is different, Apple is like the other companies. They just need to make money and less costs possible. And the second thing I wanted to end up before I go back to the question is something I read this week on a website, a French website, which is Mac Forever, which is something funny. It's a sentence of Steve Jobs, who said, "We think video is the wrong place," Steve Jobs said, 1 year before that he gets out the iPod video. And it's funny because I remember that. He said that when he presented the iPod Photo, which I bought, because I always wanted to have an iPod, but I always wanted to have a color screen and the photos on it, so I bought the iPod Photo. And just 1 year after saying that, but it's typical, once again, Steve Jobs, never believe what he says, he comes with an iPod video, and video is the new thing. So this is just to say to all the people that Steve Jobs is somebody pretty remarkable, but still be careful about what he says. It's not always truth, reality, distortion. Never forget that. So I come back to the last questions. The typical question I have to all guests. I don't know which one is it of you guys, but I listen to me back. So somebody has taken out his headphone, it seems.
That would be me. Sorry about that.
Okay, no worries. What do you think, guys, about the Intel Switch, which is still an important question? It's already now 9 months, so to say, and now we have already switched. But what do you think about the strategic choice that have made Apple?
From our standpoint, it's pretty much a non-issue. I mean, building on Intel was not any technical challenge for us. Personally, I'm a little sad that just means there's less competition out there in the marketplace. You know, I always like to see multiple companies competing to try to, say, well, hey, always one up each other and continue to improve things. I think now that Intel and the whole Intel architecture owns the market, I mean, I don't know. I think someday people are going to go, this is really geeky. This is really geeky. So only the geeks will understand this. But you know, some people are going to go, wow, can you realize that way back then they used to store their store data, you know, big endian in memory. Isn't that weird? it's sad to see the variety being lost. But yeah. You know, the short term gain is, hey, faster Macs. You know, I'm looking forward to getting one for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Dan. When I talk to my Windows friends, and I do have them, they are a lot more interested in buying Apple products now that there's an Intel processor. So I don't think you can ignore that point. So as long as we sell more Macs and we sell more Sandbox, I'm happy.
Yeah, that's your point is really the perfect point, because I see that, for example, in Germany, where they show now the iMac on TV, and they say, yeah, it's the new iMac, it's the same, almost the same, but it has an Intel. And only saying the fact it has an Intel, people know what an Intel is. People having a PC, they know what an Intel is. So it's something unknown less, and they are even more able to switch because they think, yeah, it's the same processor. But on the other side, like Dan said, if you open today a computer magazine, and that you look at the new Toshiba with an Intel Core Duo and the new PowerBook or MacBook Pro with an Intel Core Duo, the processors are the same. So comes then, of course, always the same question, what's a Mac at the end of the day? Is a Mac going to turn to be like a PC like the other ones? That's we're going to see how it goes. But still today, a Mac is still different because it's a... of course, it's the OS first, and then it's also the machine, which is all the top collated things in it. The second question seems to be a pretty stupid question, but it's actually pretty interesting because the answer from the different people are interesting. It's just, why are you using Macs and not Windows Macs?
Oh, for me, Terrence, like I said in the beginning when I was sort of talking about my background, I really want Unix at the core, and I really want to do Cocoa programming. So for me, there's not really any choice. Every once in a while when I go and use Windows, it just feels different. It doesn't work the way I expect it to, and I can't get anything done. So it's an easy choice for me. I'm not sure how Dan feels about that, but I suspect similarly.
Okay, Dan?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, for me, it's almost a matter of aesthetics. I mean, as to be a user, I cringe when I've had to sit in front of a Windows box and do anything. But as a developer, there is nothing like the developer tools that we have over on that side of the world. And I've come to a juncture in my career before where I've had to decide, you know, do I want to push ahead and go to Windows development or lose my job? And I've decided to lose my job in those
yeah.
cases. So it's. I suppose as a user, I could maybe stand using the current Windows, whatever they're calling it now. I can't even remember what it's called.
.NET.
Yeah, Longhorn or any of that stuff. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, Vista.
Their stuff looks prettier, but I don't want to deal with the technical hassles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll look into it anyway to see how it compares to macOS 10, because I promised my listeners, and especially the French listeners, which is huge numbers, that I will do a comparison of both OSs. But it looks more and more that Vista is more and more like OS 10, and I'm not saying that, it's Paul Thurrott saying that, and Paul Thurrott is pretty well known for his windsurfersite.com website. So, but anyway, we'll see how it goes, and the big advantage of Microsoft is they have already 90 or 95% of the market, so they don't have to communicate at all. They just have to say, oh, upgrade, by the way. So they have kind of a few kilometers ahead. another question which I asked to a lot of people, but you already asked, answered the question, is in which language and which technologies you develop. I guess you guys just do Cocoa, Objective-C, and only really all the technologies that are in the Mac today.
Right. We actually have a little bit of PHP running on the server side, you know, if you want to get the whole picture. But, yeah, it's Cocoa and all of the Tiger, you know, lots of the new Tiger frameworks, Tiger-only frameworks that are in Cocoa.
So that with PHP, you mean some of the pages or of the pagelets needs a PHP
ABAP
server?
No, just our own website. Like, we provide a service on our website so that Sandbox users can, you know, someone who's produced a website in Sandbox can... have a little RSS feed show up as a pagelet on their website.
Okay.
And cool. So the back end of that is actually running in PHP.
It's actually funny to remember what Terence said at the beginning, that he was already using Cocoa a few years ago when it was not even Cocoa, called Cocoa. Maybe you can remember us in dates, it means in years, when it all started, because for a lot of people Cocoa is just Mac OS X, but it was a time of Next.
Exactly.
So the first Next machines were... No, it's not a new framework at all. The first time I started going with NextStep was back in 1989.
Yeah.
And that's when the first machines came out, and they were actually probably in universities in 88 or so. So it's been out a good long time. And if you do on your Macintosh, if you do About This Mac and you look at the version, it's something now like 8H62 or something. What that really says to me is that's NextStep version 8. That's exactly how they were numbered.
Okay, and by the way, if I remember good, at that time, NextStep was working not only on the Mac but also on Unix machines and also on Windows. That's it. Am I right?
Yeah, it worked on SunSpark, HPPA RISC, and also inside Windows NT.
Because you remember this rumor of the Yellow Box coming back.
I do. I used the Yellow Box for about 3 weeks.
Okay, so because there was a rumor a few weeks ago, telling that it could come back, and that would be an answer to the other side coming also, which would be .NET running on Windows or whatever, or Wine or whatever, and emulating, and they would say that it will allow Mac developers to develop their application on Windows. So that could be interesting to have your take about that. On that, by the way. Imagine today you can run Carilia software on Windows, like, natively.
Yeah, I think it would be I'd be surprised if Apple ever went that way, but...
Yeah, me too. I don't think it'll ever happen. It would be both good news and bad news, in that it'd be a bigger market, but it would also be a whole different set of users to educate. But I don't ever see Apple doing that.
And stability. So. I mean... It's
right.
Because
exactly.
If there is something which is different between developing applications on the Mac and on the PC, is that on the PC you never know exactly where it runs. And that's one of the reasons why Windows might not be that good, so to say, but on the other hand, we have to applaud Microsoft for being able to make run an OS on every machine, not knowing where it works, where it runs. So the last question, which is the question... that Dan didn't really understood when I wrote it, and I had to explain what I meant by that. And I'm first going to ask... by the way, I'm going to ask Terence to ensure it, because then you ensure it offline, so and then you can say more about that. Do you think that is today...
What is it?
It's the last question. So do you think that is today acceptable for a software to only run on third Tiger, given the possibilities of the developers? Like, for example, Sandbox is only running on Tiger because of all the technologies you use. Like, AppZapper is only running on Tiger. But, for example, Potion Factory is running on Tiger and on Panther because they choose to support the users. What do you think about the fact that you oblige users, so to say, to use Tiger?
That is a tough question to answer.
Yeah.
It's a tough choice for a developer to do because you don't want to cut the size of your market down. At the same time, you want to stay out ahead of the curve and grow with Apple's latest technologies, which allow you to do so many new things, and that we really specifically needed in Sandbox. So we did have to make that choice. And if you're running Panther,
we are sorry.
Other products for that. Well, I mean, there's other products for that, but you know, we want to be where things are growing, and so every new Mac that's shipped obviously runs Tiger, and that's good news. And a lot of people are upgrading, which is also good news.
Yeah, yeah.
So I, you know, and then there's the other question of, you know, if you're not willing to upgrade to Tiger and get, you know, all the new stuff in Tiger, let alone, you know, what Sandbox or some of the other Tiger-only apps will do, then, you know, are you really keeping up with the latest too? And we wanna serve the customers that are interested in that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I always ask this question because for me it's pretty important, especially now, almost 1 year after that Tiger came. That developers that start today to develop an application, they don't really look at Panther because they're gonna have to work with a lot of things that aren't that as easy as today, so to say, and as practical, like using Core Data instead of using PLS or things like that. It's much more cooler.
It's a lot more powerful.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Elgato. Elgato are the makers of the ITV. You know, the ITV is this little box that you connect on your computer, more specifically on your Mac, to get the TV and more precisely the DTT, the digital terrestrial TV, and then you can watch at the recordings you have made, and you can cut some parts you don't like. You can synchronize it then to your iPod, and thanks to them for supporting us and letting us do that all for you for free.
So that's it for today. Unless you have something to add, unless anybody has something to add. Aliyah, you came back from once again being cut.
Yes, I'm done, thanks.
I think Skype doesn't want you today.
For some reason.
We're back and using Skype until iChat doesn't work. If anybody knows how to really make iChat work with a really good firewall, has to let me know. But anyway, and I know some of the guys of developing iChat might listen to us, so it's a little shout out. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Dan and Terence, for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
So
thank you. It was fun.
We'll keep in touch anyway. We'll post the link to the webpage and the link to the downloadable beta. So we'll ask everybody to go and download and use and find the bugs and report the bugs, because this is really important to all the people out there. When you see your box telling you report, close or reopen, don't click every time to reopen. Please cooperate and click on report. Otherwise, the developers cannot really know, and don't send a mail saying, "Oh, I had a bug, by the way." Yeah, okay, but because what a lot
well,
of people
don't really
know.
Funny, the ones that are really funny is when we get someone who's trying to be earnestly being very helpful, and they'll send a list of about 30 things that they found with the program, and you know that's great, except that we have this bug tracking system that assigns each one a case, and we track it. So when we get this laundry list, it's just, "Oh no, what do we do?"
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but it's what a lot of people don't know is that when you click on this report bug, there are a lot of important information in the report, which gives the operating system you have, the video card you have, everything you have, all your hardware. So it could be useful for the developers. So click on report and help the developers. And by the way, support your local developers, so to say, your software developers, because big advantage once again is to have a new version every now and then, an updated version, and that's it. So Aliyah, unless you have something to add, I'm gonna thank you once again
for
being
the
there, just being today.
It was a pleasure to listen to you guys.
Yeah, and we're gonna wrap this show as usual with the very important sentence that Steve Jobs says at the beginning of this show, which is pretty important. Which is that everybody listening to the show have to look at itself in the mirror every morning and ask the really important question: is what I'm gonna do today? Do I want to do that my whole life? And if the answer is no, there is a simple answer. The answer is just switch. Thank you, guys. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Hey, bye.
Bye.